For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Daredevil Born Again. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about episode 4 of season 1, Sic Semper Systema.
Oh, yeah.
Thus, always to system, as we always say in our Latin classes. Anyway, if you haven't checked it out, do check it out, because we're going to spoil it right now with a brief recap. But Matt and Wilson, my two good friends, continue their path toward their eventual destiny, one moving towards Daredevil, the other moving towards Kingpin. See if you can guess which is which. But
that'd be a fun switch if Daredevil became Kingpin and Kingpin just was swinging around town.
The second you see Matt starting to cook an omelet, you know it's going down.
Mm.
Anyway, the main thrust of this episode is Matt is dealing with a legal situation and, per the title of the episode, running into some frustrations with the legal system on behalf of a client who stole some fiddle faddle from a convenience store. Meanwhile, Wilson is touring around the city and dealing with a leak in terms of Daniel Blake, which he eventually finds out and forgives him. But by the end of the episode, we have made some big moves towards where they're going, with Matt checking out some costumes and doing a little training on a rooftop, and Wilson revealing what he did to Adam, the man who had an affair with his wife. Lots of other things going on in this episode, including the return of Frank Castle, the Punisher, as Matt also investigates.
They make us wait for that.
They do make you wait for that. I'm sorry. It was the thumbnail. You expected it to be like the first image as well.
Yeah, and then you get the Semper Fi title. I was hoping we would get a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm. Nope, that's it. That's all the Punisher you're going to get in this entire season.
That's plenty. You get to see him do the stuff you love to see him do. Have a little conversation in a basement where he's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm down here. His guns are safely on the wall.
I don't know if you've read this, Pete, but there was a great series by Garth Ennis called Punisher, I'm Down in a Basement Having a Conversation. Very intense. It was really 60 issues long.
I doubt it.
Anyway, yes, we do get the return of Frank Castle, the Punisher, because the other thing that Matt is doing is trying to figure out who killed Hector Ayala last episode and why. And he finds a shell casing, which has the Punisher logo on it. Very precise. I love that. Like,
who does his etching, do you think?
It wasn't him, dude. It was very clear about that. It was some wannabe.
Yeah, he showed off his shell casing, and I'm like, you could barely tell that was a skull on there.
Yeah, he's not good at metal work. Is it dangerous to etch into a live bullet?
Alive? Oh, yeah. For some reason, I was picturing you do it, like, in the chamber itself, so, like, you're holding it by the trigger.
With the trigger pointed at your head.
That seems extra. That seems extra. I don't think you need to do that.
It's like, this is stressful.
I'm not sure.
There's got to be a better way of doing this.
We're very hands-on guys, clearly. We're just like, I'm etching with my etching hand.
Yeah, well, let's actually talk about this, Pete. You seem to be kind of upset about the general lack of Punisher in this episode, but was it nice to see him back? What did you think about the Frank Castle scenes?
Every time he called him, you are the number one
Punisher fan.
Thank you. Every time that he called him Red, my heart melted a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pete. You're a bullshit fanboy. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. How dare you?
That's what he says.
That's what he calls his language.
He doesn't call me that. He's talking about
those
cops that are pretending to be.
Well, you have
Punisher.
The same tattoo that the cops have. That's what I'm
saying.
Let's
not talk about what tattoo I do or do not
you
have.
You go out on the street and have your own brand of vigilante justice, I believe. I could be wrong.
Hey, that was a long time ago. I've been cleared of that. That is no longer, they can't use that against me. movie. It's been too many years, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. He had his record expunged.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not.
He found a blind lawyer in Brooklyn there, and it was like, "You're Daredevil, right?" And he kept throwing pens at him, and he just hit him in the face every time.
I pictured you in this episode because I figure when you go to eat, you go to a dungeon, and all of your enemies are chained up behind you while you eat. Is that true?
That's where I'm taping this podcast. But you're skipping by Excuse me, Pete. I know I interrupted you several times and didn't let you talk. But please, can you just talk about the Punisher already?
Okay, great. Yeah. So it was very hard scene. It was a very powerful, emotional scene for both characters. So it was crazy to kind of get there. I was happy that they kind of strung us along the whole time with like, oh, maybe it was the Punisher because the bullet and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, why does this show hate me so much? But they finally let us off the hook. They have this heartbreaking conversation. And then Daredevil leaves because he's a horrible person and friend and just doesn't really care about the Punisher. He's just going to leave him down there. And I'm hoping, though, that they have a better relationship throughout the season. And, you know, because that was just kind of heartbreaking the way they left it. And I'm hoping with Muse, maybe they can team up and kind of take on Muse together.
I feel like it is extremely generous to call them friends at all. Yeah. Like the way that we saw them, they were only together in season two of Daredevil. And I don't think like Karen Page showed up in the Punisher show, but Matt, I don't believe was in it at all. Like they don't like each other. At all.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they have working respect for each other. You know what I mean? They're in the same field.
In the same field. Yes.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with it.
Do you think I want Daredevil to say, you're one good day from being me?
That
would be a nice turnaround. Do you think I also was surprised Punisher isn't like, hey, what's up with Karen? Mm-hmm. You see her?
Hey, have you seen Karen at all? She was pretty cool.
Maybe they didn't want to bring her up because she's not in the episode. Like, don't have an off-screen thing. Keep it about them. I did think this was a really, really good scene. And I loved...
Agreed.
I loved the choice to have the Punisher be the one to bring out Matt's feelings about Foggy that he's been holding inside for a year at this point. I thought that was very good. And him relating it back to himself, the line I wrote down was, every time I stop moving, I hear my little boy.
Very intense. Yeah. Well, and like that whole thing, like the first, that was the first honest thing you did, Red.
Yeah.
You hear him, don't you? And then they have the debate about killing. But what I liked about, and that's something almost cliched at this point, really, when it comes to superheroes. But the way they talked about it in a way that just their philosophies are so, they didn't have to hold our hand through it. We know what Punisher's idea is. We know what Matt's is. So they had a more further down the trail version of the debate, which I appreciated, and I thought the conversation was good. It felt like a therapy session, the closest thing to therapy Matt's done outside of dating a therapist.
Yeah, I thought it was really powerful, and the fact that, you know, the Punisher was able to kind of cut through the shit and to kind of be like, you know, what about your boy Foggy, you know, and that was just like, oh, my God. But it was nice to see Matt finally give some due to his boy and talk about how great Foggy actually was in his life, because that's the first time he's ever come close to anything like that. So, now,
were you mouthing along to Matt's lines about your feelings toward Foggy?
Yeah, exactly. It was nice to have someone speaking for you a little bit. You know what I mean?
That's nice. Do you feel like, I thought it was a bit much when he said he's the kindest, purest soul he ever met.
You tell me, bro.
He goes to church a lot. That's full of it. Kind, pure souls.
Bunch Foggy of asshole was, priests and nuns.
Dude, who's better than Foggy? Foggy was holding down the whole fucking thing for Matt, bro.
I mean, he just seemed like regular.
He was letting him live both the lifestyles and supporting him. And
so let me say this. You take a look. You're rewatching a previous season of Daredevil, and you see Foggy on screen. You're like, man, that's pure. That's a pure soul right
that's
there.
That's right. Yeah. Someone who's willing to do something for others. You tell me what a pure soul is, motherfucker.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't matter because that's what Matt thinks about him. That's how Matt feels about him. And that's the loss that Matt feels. And that's what the scene is about. I also, I know I keep beating this drum, but I do find it interesting, but also necessary that they had fighting in the scene, that it wasn't just Matt going down to talk to Frank and they have a conversation. Their superhero vigilante alter egos are part of it as well. And what Frank is coaching Daredevil along here is that the same thing that he learns the court sections of the thing, that he wants to go full throttle into the justice system, but maybe it doesn't work as well as he thinks it does. Right. And the Punisher is the other side of that extreme. He's like, screw the justice system. I'm the justice system. I'm judge, jury, and executioner. That's what I go out and do. And I also love the fact that when we cut in him here, he really is at his lowest point where that's all he's become. He is so knee-deep. Yeah, the Punisher. He's drunk. He's bearded. He's been living in the dirt for so long. He can't see out of it. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see whether Daredevil pushes him out of that at all. And maybe they meet some sort of middle point, but I guess we'll see.
One thing I was thinking, I think all of that is really spot on. And Matt calling Foggy the kindest, purest soul, I think is like, I think a lot of people idealize someone who's passed, especially if they have unresolved issues with them or feel guilt. Yeah. And I think that was like big time what was happening there. Now, when we came in on the Punisher, has he been out on the streets punishing? My vibe was it felt like he was just like, so I just sit here now and wait for
He's getting his guns ready, you know, for the next mission. You know, it's tough in between missions, you know what I mean? He goes through a real dark time. He's got to wrestle with a lot of voices in his head, you know, before he's ready to get back out there.
I think it was unclear to, like you're saying, Justin. Like, I think it could go either way, and it's sort of your choice however you want to take it, because I would assume, based on the fact that he says, I can't stop moving, that he has been going out, he has been doing the Punisher thing on the streets, killing bad guys, while these fanboys have been looking at him and sort of idolizing him in the police department. But like you said, Justin, it also seems at the same time that maybe he's gotten so stymied with the weight of this and with all the adoration that he's getting that he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to do my research until I find the biggest guy possible and take him down. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. And I guess it's convenient that it feels like he hasn't been doing anything, because that would compromise Matt just like going and hanging out with him maybe. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was just like a nice way to come in on the Punisher without having to grapple with the harsher questions of like, oh, he just killed a person outside of the justice system that night before or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah, it could have been two nights before, you know?
Yeah. Think that he's out there. He's having his morning bagel, classic New York bagel, shooting up a random person who like doesn't pay their parking or whatever, and then going back for lunch.
Come on, dude. He's not that petty. I think.
If he saw somebody toasting their bagel, do you think he'd shoot them? Because like, forget that.
No, I love a toasted bagel, man.
Yeah, you're dead. He just killed you.
To take a step back, the scene right before that, where Matt figures out where the shell casing is, takes a bottle, rolls it down, it goes into a sewer grate. Did you think he was about to meet the turtles?
No.
What? I did. I don't know. I thought there was a chance. Like, it rolls into the sewer.
There's only one thing that lives in the sewer.
Cowabunga, Matt. Cowabunga.
Yeah, cowabunga. Well, the turtles love, the turtles love drinking airplane bottles of liquor. You can always find them right by
right next
Donatello to loves absolute Pipar airplane bottles.
It's cool but rude.
Pete, real quick, could you just tell us where the Punisher's line is? Like when it comes to like killing versus not killing, like when does he like, I will kill you, or like, doesn't rise to the,
well, it's gotta be, you know, someone that he deems is worth his kind of time and energy, is big enough bad. That's like, okay, this guy's going to like, normally crime bosses, stuff like that. He goes after
not the bagel boss. What about a bagel boss of some sort?
Nope.
Yeah, you go after bagels. Pete, do you feel
they
like
they have holes in the bagels? He doesn't need to put any.
Yeah, how do you think the holes get there?
That's right.
Bullet holes? Yeah. Every bagel is shot once?
That's right. Yeah, every bagel store has a Punisher in the back who's going to town. He's punishing those bagels.
Yeah, he loves punishing.
You got to line them all up, man. It's tough to do.
And if you look, if you look on the bottom of every bagel, there's a little like skull etched on it so that you know the Punisher, the local Punisher did it.
The local bagel Punisher. Yeah. I'm going to school to be a local Punisher. Pete, do you feel like Luigi Mangione is sort of like your real world Punisher?
Are
you psyched about his?
I don't want reality. I don't want reality in my fiction, please. I like my made up, you know, make believe.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of this before, but he is sort of a real life Punisher.
Yes, 100%. And it's certainly dividing people in a very similar way. Yeah. It's weird that Marvel is backing away from the Punisher and reevaluating him. Very strange.
Yeah, weird.
To talk about the rest of this storyline, I did really liked the, oh my gosh, what was the guy's name? Leroy Bradford and the whole stealing the fiddle faddle thing. Loved how it was set up too at the beginning of the episode. We just kind of pass by him and then loop back to that later. I thought that was really well done because it was a weird shot that makes you be like, wait, what's up with this guy? And then we cut back to him in prison. But the whole walking through this side of the justice system that I don't think I've ever seen on TV because we're so focused on the police department. We're so focused on the trial. But instead, this negotiation that Matt does with Sophia to get him down to 10 days. And then
flirtation.
Yeah,
a real sex, sexy way of talking down the sentencing. I was like, guys,
aren't you in a courtroom? I mean, geez,
get a courtroom. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Latvian Heritage Day. Anything can happen. You know, that's the sexiest day of the year. The speech also singing that Leroy gives about the system being broken, which is really like the mission statement for the episode, I thought was a really well done speech as well.
In the season.
Leroy being like, oh, I got the blind one was also funny. That was a fun moment too.
Well, and I think top to bottom, the way that this went from casual and almost like comedic at points with the stuff that Leroy was saying, the casual nature of the arrest that you just mentioned, Alex, where it's just like, just doing our business, got a criminal, just eating food the same way. This person just wanted to get this fiddle faddled. The cops are just doing what that guy did, but they're the ones with the power.
Also
so they
eating
him.
The fiddle faddle and making him smoke the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
being cruel about it, but like a real casual everyday cruelty.
Which is scarier than...
Agreed. But the way that this show sort of just comes upon it, like we're not meant to be hyper-focused on that action. I thought that was really great. It let us be sort of like mixed about it, or like at least coming up on it like, oh, what's happening? I don't know. And then all of a sudden we're seeing the repercussions for Leroy and Matt having that revelation wash over him, someone who treats the justice system like what it is, a day job for him. And then he's seeing the repercussions and the stuff, the system that he loves and has been like propping up out and bailing on his extra judicial activities as Daredevil to fully commit to the system. And we get just dropped into it in a way that I was like, thought was really powerful and really effective in the story.
And I agree. And if you back it up even further, when we're talking with the little niece and she's saying like, I hate this city, I hate cops, you know, like that's all kind of echoed. And he's like, you got to believe, you know what I mean?
Angela Del Toro, the niece kinda, who probably will become the second White Tiger at some point once she gets that magic amulet.
We were just talking about something.
Do you notice that?
What?
We were just talking about something super serious, and now to be like to say magic amulet is very funny. We see the magic amulet in a close up. I was like, was that plastic? Where's the magic?
Oh,
is the magic
on,
in? I was like, this amulet is it's a trinket. Where's the magic?
Oh, dude, don't you're going to take down the amulet now? That is a magical amulet. White Tiger, show some respect, dude. Come on.
I respect the idea. I thought it was just a funny choice to make it like a little thing.
Do you think magic amulet is a reference to the Kingpin's omelets?
Great point.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Amulet to amulet.
I also,
your
speech, everything that you said about the Leroy Bradford scene is absolutely correct and spot on, Justin. But it's also very funny that Matt hears the thing like, please, the system is broken. I just want some fiddle faddle. I just want something sweet. Goes through this whole thing. And his conclusion is like, I should dress as a devil and swing off the rooftops.
Yeah.
Is, I don't know, kind of funny.
But I mean, everyone in this show is making weird choices.
I did like how, you know, what Justin is talking about is it's this kind of thing where it's like the system is so broken. All you have to do is pan over from a cab, a guy getting in a cab, and you're going to see just kind of casual racism and horrible doings. So I think it is a kind of an interesting way to go about it and to kind of stumble in it, as Justin was talking about. But I did like how, like, it echoed throughout the episode and was kind of a touching point as we kind of went on, and then kind of ends with this psychopath's muse, you know, draining people's blood for paint.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And let me say, so we get this like very like strong thematic criticism of the justice system. And then we have other things in this show, like Muse dropping in at the beginning and end of the episode, just like being a masked serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's like a cup of cold water in our face both times it happens. And in the middle, we get Starship's Titanic hit, "We Built This City." Mm-hmm. A couple different ways, which I was like, interesting. Yeah. An interesting blend.
Well, I love the "We Built This City" thing. I thought that was such a funny scene.
Chris trying not to lose it was also very...
Yeah, watching the kids while they're off-tune singing "We'll
No More Songs." Yeah.
Very
like,
funny.
No, not another
and
one.
And then he gets dragged to the Latvian embassy and they're singing "We Built This City" in Latvian. Very funny as well.
Yeah.
Like that whole thing... You know, it's a lighter side throughout the Fisk storyline in a certain way versus Daredevil is dealing with some pretty heavy stuff at this episode. But they're both learning that the system that they're trying to work in just does not work for them. Fisk, you know, he's going to break at some point.
Yeah, but the thing it did break. It was a great editing job, I felt like, because it does this thing of like one kid singing a song, not doing it that well. Some parts really nice, and he's trying to like it, and then it cuts to another song after he just ran away from the song, and then immediately cuts to him losing his mind at a meeting.
Yes, and he's dealing with all this bureaucracy while Matt is also stuck in the quagmire of a very different bureaucracy through the law system. But the thing that I think was so interesting in terms of the structure of this episode is that we're told for however long the episode is, let's say 45 minutes, that, yes, they're trying to hold it inside. They're trying to, you know, stick to their guns and do exactly what they said they're going to do. But Matt has an array of Daredevil costumes on the roof, and Wilson has the man who had an affair with his wife locked in a dungeon in the basement. Both of those things are there the entire time. Like with Matt, a little less so because he's like, no, I put that away. But Wilson.
He's still stroking that horn, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Excuse me, Pete. What did you say?
He's got that little horn off his mask that Karen gave him.
The exact words you used.
You know what I was saying?
Yeah, I think he said he's stroking that horn.
Yeah, he's still stroking that horn, man.
Yeah.
But this just points to how the show is very well structured. I think more than anything that we got Daredevil on the roof, Kingpin in the basement in a dungeon. They're opposite, but both their things are still there the entire time.
I mean, go ahead.
Go ahead, Justin. Okay, I will. the way that like it's positioned as like skeletons in the closet. Thick Wilson has his skeleton that's still alive in his basement, and Matt has his like external skeleton, his Daredevil outfits, just on the roof. And like the high, low, like the show is very smartly and you know, showing, not telling in a great way, showing the opposite sides of them. And the fact that Daredevil is dragged down by the system in a tragic, compromising and innocence struggling way, while Fisk is being annoyed by bureaucratic things constantly. And you can see him, like, just his temper is rising. He's trying to eat well. He's headed for a heart attack. If he has to hear Starship one more time, he's going to murder a person. And that's such an interesting opposite tone to be striking the same note. It's really, I haven't seen that done much in television. Usually it's fully committing to one tone and seeing variety there. And this is like going in two directions, but arriving at the same place.
Yeah, I also was impressed that Fisk kept him alive, you know, and was torturing him. I thought it would be
You were impressed by that choice?
Well, I felt like Adam, I thought maybe he would beat Adam to death. You know, we saw the bloody, you know what I mean? Like, he would just be no longer alive. Like, he, you know, tortured him and murdered him. So the fact that he was still alive was almost, like, impressive that he...
Well, I think that's Wilson's version of trying to be better, right? Like, he is like, I mean, to extrapolate here, he is trying to be a better person, or at least says he's trying to be a better person, trying to be better for Danessa. So leaving a guy alive in a dungeon is like, yeah, this is nice. I did a nice thing for you. I didn't kill you, potentially. We also, in that dungeon, get to see the rabbit in a snowstorm painting, the white painting with the smear of blood, which was so key to the first couple of seasons of Daredevil. So same sort of thing, like, we haven't seen that anywhere in the season. That's still there. This feels like this is the place where he's kingpin. And whether it breaks out into the rest of the city, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Who knows? We don't know. Is he going to be kingpin, or is he probably just going to be good at bureaucracy?
Yeah.
It is also interesting, like, and I don't know how they couldn't have known this, but the parallels to our politics, I don't want to talk about the politics really, but the fact that he's like mad at bureaucracy and trying to destroy it by sort of going around the rules is so Trump administration. It's crazy, the connectiveness of it. And like I said, there's no way they could have known that that's what the central focus of the presidency would be right now, but it is mirroring it in a shocking way.
Well, I think, like we talked about before, the comic book storyline was lightly paralleling that. They probably looked to the first Trump administration and thought they'd dive into it even heavier, not necessarily knowing that the time that this show would be streaming would be exactly when that second Trump presidency was happening.
Yeah.
Is happening.
Where are you? What year are you from?
I can't say.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Daniel Blake and what's going on with him. He goes clubbing with BB and leaks that they have a recycling program, which is the most disgusting thing anybody has ever heard, to the point that she puts out a report that calls him mayor garbage, I believe, which almost brings down his mayorship. But then ultimately Fisk forgives Daniel.
Threatens
his life, and then forgives him because Daniel apologizes and pledges his loyalty. What's going on here?
I don't know, but we're giving a lot of attention to Daniel, and I don't know why. Is he going to be like...
He's the next Fisk. Yeah, he's kind of going to be grooming him to take over the family business.
But I don't think so. Like, is he going to become...
No, the way that the shots happened, it really felt like a father-son kind of, you're my mentor.
I was going to say, is he his son? Like, I feel like he's probably his son, right?
Maybe, but I don't know. It just feels, wouldn't we get a little allusion to that? He's just such a sycophant in a way that, like, feels like it's something that the turnaround of him confessing and then Fisk being cool with it is just showing them, like, in lockstep. But I don't know enough about Daniel to know what his goals are besides just being close.
Well, I don't think, here's pure theory, right? I think Daniel is Fisk's son. Daniel doesn't know. Fisk does know. And I think the reason that is in there is because the affair with Adam is such a big deal. If Wilson has been keeping a secret son this entire time and not telling Vanessa, he has a equally, not bad thing, but equal thing that he didn't tell her. And that feels like it tracks with what Wilson would do, where he would be like, I'm angry at you, Vanessa, for having an affair. So I locked the guy you had an affair with in a dungeon in a basement for years at this point. But I also didn't tell you about this thing.
Or it could just be that, you know, this kid doesn't have a father figure in his life and he really looks up to the power that he wields.
Sure. But just dramatically speaking, the show is so tightly structured at this point to have random dude shows up who likes Fisk seems a little weird to me.
Well, I agree. And like maybe he will end up being the son or a son. But like to what end? Is this all pointing toward a clash between Fisk and Vanessa? Like, they're already clashing. Are they going to have to go to war against each other with her running crime and him running politics?
No, I think it's more about the Sheila showdown that is coming with Fisk.
Oh, you think there's going to be a Sheila showdown?
Not
a Sheila shutdown.
Sheila and Fisk keep bumping heads, and the kid is all about Fisk, so I think, you know. Sheila's, I'm going to be here after you guys gone, is the kiss of death. She's going soon. You know?
Oh, definitely. The Sheila showdown is going to be short. It's the short Sheila showdown, I think. Yeah. She will be soundly kicked out immediately. But maybe the whole thing is like Daniel's rising to power because of his sycophancy rather than skill operating outside of the system. Maybe he will get Fisk's administration in a harsher trouble. Which will then push Fisk further toward being kingpin again. I don't know, but it just it's a part of the story that everything feels so intentional, and this section of the show hasn't revealed its intention yet. I don't think.
It might be, to get back to the Trump of it all, the fact that sycophants rise with Trump, so they may throw it in there. But I still feel like it has to be tied tighter to the story of the show. It also is very weird to see him out partying with BB and them getting drunk.
Yeah,
I was like, dude, how do you not know why
I don't know how, nothing against Michael Gandolfini, I don't know how old he is, but he looks like he's their dad partying with him.
Oh, that's funny. I don't know. He's got a baby face.
He seems pretty young.
That's true.
I will say, like, also the BB nature of the show is a little
BB
strange.
Report?
The BB Report. Like, having it just be, like, fun weirdos who pop up. Like, I like it. But I'm also like, what's she doing here? Is she
going to?
You got
to give character actors a showcase, you know, because that guy on the bench is like, I'd be a vigilante right now. It was just hysterical.
Yeah, that's true.
Whenever they cut to the BB Report, it's just a series of Pete's talking to me. It's just different Pete's being like, you know what I think? The bagels are shot with a gun. That's what I think. That's
give
my,
the people what they want,
take.
Man. I don't know why you're mad.
Yeah,
you take a paint can, you put a bagel in it, you shoot it with a gun, and you sell it to anybody. Who needs
it?
Everything,
man. I know this is what I've been asking for, but I also did find it confusing that so far it seems to be a TikTok video that's shot in YouTube horizontal, not resolution. What is the word that I'm looking for?
Aspect ratio.
Aspect ratio. Yeah, just very
but
well.
Shot very well. And it looks like it's shot on film, saying.
And then also, though, she has an article on her website that seems to be very damning. But like I was indicating before, I don't understand what the big deal. Maybe I'm just not getting this. I just don't understand the big deal with him being like, we're going to find out about a recycling program. And she's like, that's it. They're done for. What was going on? What did I miss there?
I don't know. And like, I think maybe it's saying like, hey, BB is hanging out with Daniel, but that's because she's using him as a source, and that will continue. And maybe she is going to upend the Fisk administration, but
yeah, maybe she'll be the new Fisk. You know what I mean?
Think everyone wants to be a kingpin?
Yep.
Wow.
If you're in New York City, you've got to be wanting to be a kingpin. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A couple of other things about this storyline, or at least one other thing, we should probably talk about the Red Hook of it all, because they're going to totally remake Red Hook, which was pretty funny because I was like, too late, bro. Already happened.
They show that thing and it's like, it's the same. What are you going to put in more like high-end clothing stores?
Second IKEA?
Yeah. So yeah, it is funny. I mean, that's just a classic. People who
it's
don't
IKEA
live in New
district.
York, so you don't know.
Yeah,
but I do like they seem to be shooting in a very clean warehouse area. So I don't know what the real problem is.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. But we also get Buck talking about the crime stuff that's going down in Red Hook. Seems to be a big deal. So that's lurking in the background. To get back to the Muse thing,
Real quick, before you move off of this, on our live show this week, we talked to someone who works at a high-end whiskey distillery in Red Hook.
Yes.
Like, all right, basically around the corner from where they were, the map was indicating in the crime-ridden area.
Yes.
So check that. grab a cocktail before you do a crime, Muse.
One thing that I was thinking about pretty heavily with this episode, and this is a couple of things in a couple of different directions, but I was sort of trying to wrap my mind around why this show, in my opinion, is so successful so far. And I think fans were certainly responding very positively to it, but I think fans are responding positively as well. And we talked about this last episode. One of the aspects is that I do think it's somewhat structured like a comic book while still being definitively on TV. And I bring up that in relationship to Muse because it feels very Claremont-esque dropping these things in that we're going to pay off in later episodes. We got the Punisher tattoo leading up to the Punisher appearance. We get to see Muse in this episode, even though it doesn't necessarily play into the themes. It's just kind of layering it in for later. And I think that works really nicely, similar to... This is the other side of the thing that I was thinking about, is I feel like the response to this Marvel show is very similar to X-Men 97, another legacy show that looked at that legacy, continued it, but then figured out how to do it today. Granted, there's a much bigger span between X-Men, the animated series, and X-Men 97 than there is between Daredevil and this, but what works here is it looked at the previous three seasons of Daredevil plus Defenders, Punisher, etc. It was like, okay, what works about that? Now let's figure out how to make that show in 2025. And that's what I think they're doing here, while not ignoring the comic book source material, while not ignoring what works about Daredevil, Wilson Fisk, etc., which, not to throw stuff under the bus at the end here, but I think that contrasts with a lot of the recent MCU shows that feel like they are based in how great the MCU is and pivoting off the MCU rather than looking to things from the past and how they could tweak them, improve them, pay tribute to them, etc.
Well, it's like taking something and doing a good job writing it.
Right.
Is to boil down what you're saying to, like, I think the writing is just better in this than other MCU shows because they are treating it like TV, where it's not like, okay, how can we do that? And like, it just feels a little bit more smartly and subtly done as opposed to being like, Muse is here, so let's have Muse show up, and then Muse is there, and then Muse is bad, and then Muse leaves. If this feels like a little bit more nuanced across the board.
Yeah.
Well, I first off, I think it's weird that, you know, like he reaches into a sewer and immediately you think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You see him in the sewer and Muse and you're like, oh, this is the greatest show on television. So I don't know, man. It's just funny that you don't think it. You don't think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when Muse is in the sewer, but someone reaches in.
Whenever I watch the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, I always thought Muse was going to show up.
No, okay.
Every single episode. And he never did. He never did.
No, Pete, do you think Muse is Splinter?
Oh, man, underneath the mask?
We don't know.
Yeah. Double mask? Do you think he's wearing a double mask like when Batman wears a disguise?
Oh, I love when he puts hair on top of his cowl.
You talking about Patch? You talking about Patch?
Patch Adams, 100%.
No, I'm talking about
that
matches.
That was a Batman
below.
Movie. Yes,
matches.
Patches and matches.
Yeah, patches and matches. I got to mix
up. The ultimate team up. Anything else about this episode? I'll mention we got a reference. Could have been
I did want to push back on you.
I was in the middle of a sentence, Pete.
That's when you push back.
All I was going to say was the reference. Could it have been a Skrull? Nope. Immediately should have got
that
down.
Was, I love that.
That was fun.
Was really good.
That was fun. Yes.
Pete, now push back.
Yeah, I wanted to push back. I don't think this is as great of a show as you're making it out to be. Just because they are playing with emotions a little
bit. But that's exclusively because they killed Foggy, right?
No, it's not just that. It's also the fact that they also killed White Tiger, got rid of Karen Page, then kind of said the Punisher is, murdered these people, but then didn't. I just feel like we're playing with emotions.
Right, you hate drama. You want it to be...
We're kind of playing with emotions here, and
Yeah, you would prefer not to feel anything while you're watching a TV show, which is why you love shows like Ted Lasso.
Yeah, can I just not feel for a little while? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just let me not feel things.
Turn off your brain. Popcorn show. Yeah.
Nice.
And then after you're done turning off your brain, what do you do next? Continue to turn off your brain, right? And then just like a little
bit
more.
It won't go anymore off.
As Punisher said, if you stop moving, that's when you hear the voices, bro. So you got to stick and move.
Nice. I saw. Did you see the Ted Lasso season 4 trailer where Muse shows up and is draining Coach Beard of his blood?
Oh man, who didn't see that coming?
I did. Every episode of Ted Lasso, I thought Muse was going to show up. So I'm glad they're finally paying off that.
You might have a Muse problem.
Yeah. Murder is life. Murder is life.
I do really like the fact that we find out the murals we've been seeing throughout the show, same sort of like peppering throughout thing, are by Muse. I thought that was a very cool revelation here. He's good at art, that guy.
Yeah.
Did he do the triggered Punisher symbol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did that. We got to see his signature on the White Tiger mural. And earlier, we've seen that Kingpin mural, so presumably he did that one as well.
And are we meant to assume that the paint is made from blood?
Yeah, how do you get the white blood? You
know what I was going to say.
So for anybody who doesn't know, in the comics, Muse was created by Charles Soule and Ron Gardy. He was an inhuman who was an artist. We don't know what his identity is or anything like that, but he is super powered. He has inhuman powers. He can move super fast. He's super strong, and he gets that by absorbing sensations, if I remember correctly. So, which makes it very difficult for Daredevil, who completely exists on sensations. So he's not, he doesn't have painting powers or anything like that. He just loves to paint and he loves to kill people, and that he drains them of their blood. The first way they discover him is, I believe he drained 100 inhumans of their blood and made a mural out of it. And then later he graduates into making sculpture out of human body parts before ultimately Daredevil and his sidekick Blindspot, who will not show up in the series.
Blindspot, you don't know. He could show up later on.
You could. Anything could happen.
I think we're going to get a human body part sculpture. And I'm sad to say, I think it may be involving Daredevil's girlfriend.
Mm. Oh.
That's my predict.
Yeah. Sure. He's going to make a Heather Glenn.
Yes. Heather Glenn.
Beautiful. We'll see what happens. Anything else about the episode before we start to wrap up here? Anything else from your notes? I will mention the episode was written by David Feige, but he is not related to Kevin Feige.
What? I find that hard to believe.
Yes. He's an unrelated lawyer and pretty lauded TV creator. I'm forgetting what shows he worked on, but
you're telling me this Feige is not related to Kevin Feige at all.
Yeah.
Same spelling?
Same spelling. It's crazy. There's more than one of them.
That's not possible.
The fix is in. The system is broken, Pete says.
That's right.
Yeah, it's probably a similar situation to David Blake, where he's secretly Kevin Feige's son, but he doesn't know, even though they have the same last name.
Oh, yeah.
Man, you see sons everywhere, Alex.
And everyone loves caramel corn.
Well, speaking of sons, actually, we finally got Kingpin giving a "When I Was a Boy" speech, so that was a fun callback to do.
Yeah. That was nice.
Bringing it back. Thick Wilson.
All right. Why don't we wrap up by going to our vision board? What do you guys want to see in the next episode of the show, Pete?
One thing you didn't answer, though, when Muse takes the blood, how does he mix it to get the different colors for the paint?
I don't know, but I'll do some experiments over the course of this week and I will let you know.
Yeah, get back to us.
I mean, red is easy.
Yeah, we got the red part.
We're good on red.
Just let your kids know you're doing this experiment for a podcast, so it's important that they don't.
Yeah.
Where do you think I'm going to get the blood?
That's what I'm saying.
We have two episodes next week, by the way. Episode 5 and episode 6. So
buckle up.
Buckle up, bro. What do you think is going to happen? Any predictions for the next two episodes of the season?
Full Muse. We're hitting our Muse tube
already?
I think. Yeah, I think we're going to get some harsh, violent action in these next two. I think we've been able to read the tea leaves that the reason these two are paired is for creative reasons. So that's exciting. Means we're going to get something probably horrifying happening in the end of the next one. Like perhaps a statue that I mentioned, maybe a justice is blind, but out of human
How do you think it's going to get tied in? I hope Leroy's not in the equation. You know what I mean? I'm worried about our boy Leroy, if White Tiger is any indication.
I think he's okay. I don't think he's risen to the come under the Punisher cop eyeball. But I think it's going to be a Muse focus. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Punisher is going to tell him you're one box of fiddle faddle away from being me?
They only say fiddle faddle a couple of times, then they move on to caramel corn. I don't know why you're going back to fiddle faddle.
Fiddle faddle is caramel corn.
Yeah. Peach?
Sure, then call it caramel corn.
I think it's fiddle faddle.
Brand name. Fiddle faddle.
Are you eating fiddle faddle? I mean, Alex, I feel like you're a fiddle faddle guy.
I always err on the side of Cracker Jack, but sure, I'll fiddle faddle now and again.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, Pete, what are you having for lunch, by the way? Fiddle faddle?
Caramel corn.
Oh, okay.
Wow, same lunch. Alex, fiddle faddle, Pete, stroking that horn. And that's the show.
Yes, I would love to see a little more Punisher next episode. I think that would be great. I definitely want to pick up on the Muse stuff as well.
Check in with Karen Page.
Yeah, I'll give maybe a contrary opinion to, nobody has said this here, but I think what people feel online, I would imagine. I hope we don't get Daredevil and Kingpin. I want to drag this out. Like, I love the tension between this. It's working so well for me. Keep it going.
I agree. I don't think we're going to get there.
Do you think we'll get how Adam got in that cage, though?
Yeah, I think we'll pick up on that. But what were you saying, Justin, about?
I like it. It feels like we're in the middle of the build to them. Like, we're going to see Matt put on the Daredevil uniform, but to deal with something that's not Kingpin.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, I'm very surprised by that feeling, because I usually find it frustrating when they spend a season out of costume for a superhero show. It's that whole Surf Dracula meme online where it's just they wait till the end. But the tension is there and it's working really well. So keep going as long as you can.
They're not ready yet.
They're still baking. And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, stay marvelous.
Yeah, sorry, you got to take me to the ER. I shot a hole in my foot when I was making bagels at home. It'd be a huge mistake.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.